We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. We have a lot of breaking news. The BLM is at it again. The same people that came after the ranchers, the cowboys, the farmers, the miners, now are coming after the horses. And this is also an illegal operation that they've got going on here. And, of course, we have some updates as well. It's also the Secretary of the Interior, the Department of the Interior, that is in charge of the catastrophe at that gold mine. It was miners in Oregon. You remember that they were going to shut down because they were just too concerned about any tiny spillovers. So then they go to another area, to a gold mine, and even though a retired engineer said what they were proposing to do was going to explode, and he did it about a month, I think, before they actually did the operation, he said, of course, they're going to do it anyway, and they're going to use this as an excuse to increase the size of the bureaucracy. And now we see that the Indians downstream, this went through several states, massive pollution of heavy metals from the explosion that the EPA caused. Again, the EPA as well as the BLM under the Department of the Interior. This massive explosion that released all of this heavy metal into the river that polluted the river through multiple states is now going into the lands of the Navajo Indians, and they could care less about that. They said, you're not going to get any help from the EPA. You're not going to get any help from FEMA. We're just going to destroy your drinking water. That's the way the government rolls. We're also going to take a look at politics, because we've got some new polls showing that Ben Carson is now taking the lead in Iowa, and he is beating the drum about an intensified drug war. Yes, maybe Ben has been under anesthesia for the last 44 years. Ben, the drug war doesn't work. You need to understand it doesn't work. We're going to talk about why it doesn't work. We're going to talk about why Ben Carson doesn't seem to understand the Constitution or individual liberty. We're also looking at Jeb Bush's campaign is collapsing. But when questioned about it, he says, blah, blah, blah. That's my response. Kind of like, I guess, in that first debate when he said, they call me Jeb and I earned that. I still don't understand what that comment meant. But yeah, his response was blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on to say that if he wasn't running for president, taking all this flack from Donald Trump, he could be doing some really cool things. Well, we want to encourage Jeb Bush to go explore those really cool things. Who knows what he might be doing? Maybe he'll be parachuting out of airplanes like his dad used to do. But let's encourage him to do that. We've got an update from Tony Blair. He's now issued an apology for Iraq. Well, kind of, not really. He says, I'm sorry that I acted on bad intelligence that was given to me by other people. That's as close as you're going to get to an apology from any of these people. We're going to look at what happened in detail with Tony Blair. We're going to look at the long history of the buildup to Iraq. We'll point out that. But I also want to tie it in with a documentary that I saw yesterday. It was essentially about a back and forth between charter schools and public schools, what can go wrong with charter schools, looking at some of the crony capitalism problems that you get when you have the government financing charter schools. And they looked at the Fethullah Gulen schools. Fethullah Gulen is a man who came from Turkey. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the fact that this is one of the largest networks of charter schools in the world and in the country and in Texas. It was just recently surpassed by another charter school group in Texas, but they have over 1,000 schools worldwide. This is a radical Turkish imam who was kicked out of Turkey because they were concerned that he wanted to set up an Islamic state, a transnational caliphate. Does that sound familiar? Actually, that happened back in 1999. When they kicked him out of Turkey, where do you think he went? He went to the United States. Who got him into the United States? The CIA. The CIA wrote letters of accommodations for this fellow who has now, through his network of charter schools, ripped off the American public to the tune of $500 million. And this is a guy who wants to put out the Islamic Caliphate state. Not just training terrorists, it's educating the next generation of terrorists. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
It's the time of the season.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. As I mentioned in the last segment, we're going to talk about the latest BLM illegal operation, killing 2,000 horses that are protected, wild horses. It was an illegal operation, but even more interesting is how much money was made by an individual, and then the fact that the Office of Inspector General doesn't really want to investigate this. That's what I find most interesting. But before we do, I want to talk about the latest updates that we have coming out of the Middle East. We've got Tony Blair in an article on Infowars.com from RT, acknowledging that ISIS stemmed from the Iraq invasion, but he refuses to apologize for toppling Saddam. He says, I can say that I apologize for the fact that the intelligence we received was wrong. In other words, he's not apologizing. He's simply passing the buck. Of course, Hillary Clinton never apologizes, never even comes that close to an apology. And we're going to talk some more about the lies of the Benghazi hearing that we heard the other day, as well as the concerns about her health. I think legitimate concerns that have been brought up by Matt Drudge. The Washington Post pushed back on that, and then Drudge yesterday pushed back on what the Washington Post said. So we're going to have the back and forth of that. We're also going to play you a little bit of what Drudge was referring to when he talked about there were issues of her health that were maybe the most important things that came out of the Benghazi hearings. But before we get to Hillary Clinton, before we get to the BLM, I want to take a look at what's going on with this Blair non-admission of problems. He says, I find it hard to apologize for removing Saddam. I think even from today in 2015, it's better that he's not there than that he is there. And I would have to say exactly how. When you stop and think about the massive amount of blood and money that has been spent, the massive amount of innocent lives that have been spent, the pollution of Fallujah with weapons of depleted uranium that is causing birth defects, things that are going to happen and continue to happen for generations. How do you justify something like that? And of course, when I look at Tony Blair confessing to what he says is blowback and then not even really taking responsibility for making the decision, look, those people work for you. As Harry Truman said, the buck stops with you. If you hire the intelligence people, if they're your people, they're producing the intelligence, you trust them, you don't want to vet that intelligence yourself personally, you're still responsible. You're ultimately responsible. You're the one pushing this war. And we know from just released memos that Tony Blair was conspiring with George W. Bush a year in advance of this all happening. This was something they're working on for a very long time. But of course, what he would like to do is he would like to have you continue to focus on the fact that mistakes were made, that this is all part of a blowback, that ISIS came from bad policy, that bad policy came from bad intelligence. That's simply not the case. Not the case at all. This is not blowback. This is criminal conspiracy to create ISIS. This is what we're looking at here. I think it's interesting, go back and look at a documentary film called The Fog of War that was done by Errol Morris, a very good documentarian. He did another film called The Thin Blue Line that was about the murder of a police officer, a guy that was sitting on death row. And when Errol Morris looked and investigated this case and started looking at the facts of it, he found they had the wrong man. They were interested in getting somebody punished for the death of this police officer, but it was the wrong man. And this is actually really an amazing documentary. He got the person who actually did the murder to confess when he was interviewing him for the documentary. So that's The Thin Blue Line. He followed that up with a lot of good documentaries. I think the best was The Fog of War. And that was about Robert McNamara. And again, he had this setup where just kind of like, he called it the Interatron. And it was kind of like a teleprompter, except that instead of them seeing what they're supposed to read and it's a TV announcer is typically the way the anchors typically do it. We don't use teleprompters here, but in most news organizations, they will have everything written out for them. They just read it off the teleprompter. But instead, these people would look at this teleprompter, they would see Errol Morris's face and they would have a conversation with this box. And it was interesting because it kind of put it off in another level of indirection. Kind of the same way that when Alex went into Google and start and put a real camera in front of the people's face and started talking to them last Thursday, recording them, putting a camera there. They got all flustered because he was right there with that camera in their face. But they were sitting in front of a laptop that has a camera, has a microphone. They don't think about that. Same way we had the video of Tom Mabe as he would dress up like a man in black government agent with the headphones and carrying a boom mic, and he would chase people around in public. He'd go up to them and put a boom mic in front of their faces. They're talking to other people sitting on a bench or as they're walking down the street talking on the phone, and they would start to get angry or they would try to run away from him, and yet their phone conversations are being recorded all the time by the government, by the NSA, being passed on to the government by the phone company. So there's this, when Errol Morris would do this with his documentaries, he would use this in Terratron, and they would be talking to a box instead of to a person. It would relax people, interestingly enough. That's how he got the murderer to confess, and it's how he got Robert McNamara, the former defense secretary during the Vietnam War, that's how he got him to confess to being a war criminal. Yeah, he did that. He got him to confess to using the Gulf of Tonkin as a false flag, interestingly enough. Now, that right there was huge. He got him to confess that they knew that the domino theory was total nonsense. He recalled a meeting that they had with the North Vietnamese decades after the war. And one of the North Vietnamese pounded the table and said, "You stupid idiot. You thought we were going to become pawns of the Chinese? Don't you know anything about history? Don't you know that the Vietnamese have been fighting the Chinese for 1,000 years for their independence? We didn't want to be slaves of the French. We didn't want to be slaves of the Americans. And we didn't want to be slaves of the Chinese either." And of course, we've seen that now in subsequent years. We've seen that there's been a back and forth of the Chinese trying to encroach upon Vietnam, and we've seen them pushing back. So he admitted that. He admitted that they knew that the Gulf of Tonkin, quote-unquote, attack was total nonsense, and they used it as justification to escalate the war. But he tried to deflect things. He didn't want to say that he was a war criminal because of Vietnam. What he wanted to say was, well, he was at the end of his life. He died shortly after this documentary was done. And so he wanted to confess to being a war criminal, but not in a way that could really get him in trouble. So what he said was, the bombing campaigns that they had conducted during World War II against Japan, the firebombing campaigns, he said, they caused massive destruction that was far worse than the nuclear weapons that were dropped. And he said it was unwarranted. And he said, if we had lost the war, we would have been tried as war criminals. So he would confess to being over the top with World War II because World War II was recognized by everyone as being a just war. We were attacked by the Japanese. We responded. But when he would not confess to being a war criminal when it came to Vietnam, because they had initiated that war and they had created that war with a false flag attack. So watch that film. Watch Fog of War. It's a very well done documentary. It'll really enlighten you to it. But I thought about that again yesterday as I saw this Blair acknowledgement of ISIS being created by their blowback, by their bad policy. I was watching another documentary. It was a screening by a local filmmaker. I was invited to see it. It's called Killing Ed. It's about charter schools, the back and forth between charter schools and public schools. One of the things that I think is very interesting about this is they use the worst case example of what can go wrong with charter schools, which is the Gulen organization, started by Fethullah Gulen. Now, Fethullah Gulen was someone who was a radical imam in Turkey. So radical, in fact, that he had to flee the country. What he was saying in Turkey was he wanted to establish a transnational Islamic state, a caliphate. Does that sound familiar? Of course, this was prior to 1999. He fled in 1999, 16 years ago, well before ISIS appeared on the scene a couple of years ago when they started calling him ISIS, because we all know what ISIS is. We have seen the American government, we've seen the CIA create the Mujahideen and use them against Russia. They became Al-Qaeda. Then Al-Qaeda goes into Syria to be used as our surrogates. They call them Al-Nusra at first, then they call them ISIS. And this is something that's been going on a long time, and he had to come up with a new narrative. And we're going to tell you how this worked out when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We are on the march. The empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We were talking in the last segment about Tony Blair apologizing that he had received bad intelligence and saying that because somebody else had made mistakes. I mean, this is not even mistakes were made type of vague apologies. He's not even acknowledging responsibility for bad intelligence. He said, I received it. I'm sorry I received it. But hey, you know, wars happen. So after all this happened, and after we see now that ISIS has been the logical conclusion, many people are saying, the blowback, that's what he's trying to put out there for you. What I'm trying to get you to understand is that this is not blowback. This is not only a phony apology. It is a phony explanation for ISIS. You have to understand, as we've pointed out so many times here on InfoWars, they have been using Islamic jihadists as surrogate fighters for a very long time against Russia. And of course, Vladimir Putin just said that. He said, there are no moderate terrorists, in spite of the what we've been told by John McCain as he meets with al-Nusra, which then becomes al-Qaeda. They've seen the fact that we used the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Russians, then they became al-Qaeda. They've seen the fact that we used Chechen terrorists against Russia internally, then they brought these same Chechen terrorists into Syria. They became al-Nusra and ISIS. This is very obvious to everybody. We've had even congressmen when they were trying to get the Syrian war started in a year and a half ago. Congressmen were saying, and it became a meme. We helped to publicize that. Do not use our military forces as an air force for al-Qaeda. Everybody knew that these quote-unquote Syrian rebels and moderate rebels, so forth, they were all al-Qaeda. They were the jihadi terrorists, whatever name you want to call them. ISIS, ISIL, doesn't matter. They're all the same. And we knew that it was rigged up. We had multiple congressmen saying it. We had Dennis Kucinich, retired congressman, saying it. Rand Paul, I think. Ted Cruz said it. It's Air Force for al-Qaeda. And, of course, they're being used as surrogates. But this is not something that happened because of bad foreign policy. This is by design. It's by design by the CIA. The CIA created these organizations. They equipped these organizations. They trained them. And they continue to equip them and support them and not fight them. And that's what we're seeing now that Putin is going into the area. We have this article up on InfoWars.com. Baghdad allows Russia to bomb ISIL terrorists who are running from Syria into Iraq. They say, come on, get rid of them. We're tired of them being given equipment and allowed to operate here with impunity because the Americans can see them there. But they want to use them as leverage against not only Russia, but against us internally. Understand that when the USSR collapsed, they lost their justification for the big ticket items that they had been using, the military industrial complex for the Cold War. How do you justify these transcontinental ballistic missiles, the multiple warheads, the massive bombers, and the big naval group carriers? You can't justify that against terrorists. So they had to start the Cold War back up. And what better way to do it than to use the same group of terrorists that they had used to essentially defeat the USSR in Afghanistan, the same group of terrorists that they had created in order to start the never-ending war on terror to justify the buildup, the military buildup within our country, within America, the militarization of the police, and using the military as police in our country. And a good example of this, as I started to talk about yesterday, was the film that I saw yesterday that was going through the history of one of the largest charter school groups in the country. And it's being run by a guy who is here on exile out of Turkey, Fethullah Gulen. He had to flee Turkey 16 years ago because he was trying to create ISIS 16 years ago in Turkey, a transnational Islamic caliphate. And he was thrown out of Turkey, had to flee. Where did he go? He went to America, and he got into America because the CIA gave him special letters. There were many people in the government that didn't want him to come into the country, that opposed that. But they were overruled by these letters by the CIA. And so what has he done? In the last 16 years, he has been setting up Islamic schools for his brand of Islam throughout the world, and especially in the United States. And not only that, but we are subsidizing that. And he talks about how he's creating the golden generation, talking about how they're going to set up a spider net spider web to collect people in this spider web. They're going to bide their time, just like a spider. They're creating this web. They're creating the next generation of fighters in these schools, and they're just going to wait for this to happen. And he's supported in all this by the CIA, the same people that created Al-Qaeda, the same people that created ISIS. The way you want to the way you can change society, the way you can control societal change, of course, is through schools, through education. And, you know, I don't want my schools being controlled by somebody like Bill Ayers, but that's where he went to hang out. See, the educational establishment, the other side of this, of course, we can have organizations like the Gulen schools get massive funding from the government through the charter school program. But on the other side, you have the socialists like Bill Ayers who insinuate themselves into the government education system with the intention of remaking our society. And that's been the purpose of the government schools for quite some time. They didn't really start to realize that purpose until they consolidated control to the national level. And now things are starting to change very rapidly. We can all see what's happening. And the question is, are we going to be able to control that? But that's the way you change society. Every dictator has known that you grab the children when they're young, going all the way back to Plato's society. He said, we got to take the children away from their parents. We don't want to have families. Not only do they not want to have strong families, in Plato's Republic, they wanted to make sure no one even knew who their mother and father were. And so that's been the goal of people who want to have an authoritarian society throughout history. And you've heard the quotes, give me a child when he's three, let me have him for a few years and he's mine for life. Or the biblical version of it, train up a child in the way he should go and he will not depart from it when he is old. So there's your choice. You want to change the future? You do it with your children. And you either turn your children over to some social engineer, whether they're an Islamic fundamentalist or whether they're a socialist like Bill Ayer, or you do it yourself and you instill the values in them that you want to instill in them. That's the future. The future is in your hands to educate your children. But that's where the people who want to engineer, who want to overthrow society, and I think it's very troubling to see that we have all these Islamic schools done by one of the first persons to talk about the Islamic State, to talk about a transnational caliphate being brought here to the United States and being used to train children in the United States and bring over a lot of people to do that from Turkey, by the way. Now, there's another article that we have today on Infowars.com, again about Syria. Russian airstrikes hit 9 hospitals in Syria. I've talked many, many times about the repeated airstrikes by the Obama administration in Afghanistan. They attacked a Doctors Without Borders hospital for over a half hour, a hospital that they knew was a hospital prior to that. They were called as the attack was going. That continued on for a half hour. It was a horrendous atrocity. They have not apologized for it. They tried to cover up the investigation. But now we see that it is something that is now evidently the rule of war by everyone. Now we have the Russians doing it to 9 hospitals in Syria. That is the kind of brutality we have, and it makes it all the more important that we stop these wars. Stay with us. We're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about the BLM going to war with Americans. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show.
Live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. We're going to talk about this situation with the BLM illegally selling thousands of wild horses. And of course, we've had Viggo Mortensen, the star of many movies, but one of them that you may know, of course, is the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Many, many other movies, though. But he was on talking to Alex Jones about a documentary that he had done about this very thing, about the illegal slaughter of wild horses. But now it's been taken to a new level. And I would say not just crony capitalism, but I would say it looks kind of criminal to me. I want to get to that story, and that's the story we have up on Infowars.com today. First, real quickly, we have Ancient Defense back for a limited time. We have 15% off of Ancient Defense. Right now at InfoWarsLife.com, you can get the highly rated Ancient Defense Herbal Immunity Complex for 15% off. It combines more than 14 different herbs and extracts to help bolster the body's natural defenses. This super high-quality nutraceutical is already very affordable, but now you can get it for 15% off to try it if you haven't tried it. But now is a good time to stock up if you have tried it, because if you tried it, you probably will like it. Visit InfoWarsLife.com. Get your Ancient Defense today for 15% off while supplies last. Now, in this story about the BLM illegally slaughtering horses, one of the things that I think is interesting about this is something that potentially may get the public upset, may get them angry when they see horses being slaughtered. You can't get them upset when they throw ranchers off of their land in Nevada so they can seize the land and turn it over to some large corporations for crony capitalist purposes. You can't get them upset when they throw miners off the land because take away their mining rights that they've had for nearly as long as this has been a country. No, you can't get them upset about that. They say, well, you know, these ranchers, they're just rich people. And it's like, no, they're not rich. No. Even though they had a large fine put against the Bundy family, they were not rich. You don't get rich because you have large fines, folks. Okay? You also have the BLM throwing the miners out because they said, well, there's going to be a little bit of soil runoff into the water. And then they have this massive destruction of a gold mine done by the EPA, which the Navajo Indians are asking for help now. And the federal government says, no, we're not going to help you at all. We're not going to give you any FEMA help. We're not going to do anything to clean this up. The massive spill that the EPA created that they were warned would happen by people who were there. And we were told by the retired engineer who wrote the op-ed piece, he says, not only are they going to blow this thing up and create an environmental catastrophe, but they're going to use it as justification to make the agency bigger. All of these things are happening. Very, very predictable. So does the American public get angry when they do this kind of stuff to ranchers, to miners, to farmers? We had the Texas farmer and rancher that we just ran the story about 2 weeks ago. BLM is trying to take his half of his land. They're going through Texas, the Red River area. They're moving the boundaries around, and they're going to take a massive amount of land if they're not stopped. The Texas governor, Governor Abbott, has put together a task force to push back against this theft by the BLM. So hopefully that won't happen. But they're going to take not only that rancher's land, but they will take his house if they are successful in moving those boundaries. And there's many, many other ranchers in that area that are also in that kind of situation. But now we've got a situation with horses. Horses that were slaughtered. Horses are wonderful animals. People can get upset about this. Maybe they will care more about that than they do when the government throws cowboys and Indians off of their land, when they take their property, when they take their property rights, when they destroy their livelihood, when they destroy their lives. They've done everything short of killing them. And of course, they came pretty close to killing us when we were out there at the Bundy Ranch. But they have killed a lot of horses. Now, listen to this. Here's what happened. They sold these 2,000 horses to a rancher. They paid $140,000 to deliver these 2,000 horses to a rancher named Mr. Davis. He paid only $10 a piece. $10 a piece. So he paid $20,000 for these horses. And they paid $140,000 just to transport them to him. You see a problem with that? If you're a taxpayer, even if you don't care about horses, do you see a problem with that? And then he turned around and made a profit of $154,000 by slaughtering them immediately. And that was against the law to slaughter the horses. Now, the BLM employees never attempted to verify the information that Mr. Davis provided regarding his intentions for the horses that he bought, despite the unusually large number of horses that he was buying. The agency also did not stop selling the horses to Mr. Davis after receiving reports that he was sending them to slaughter. So not only did they not do due diligence, but when they were warned that he was illegally slaughtering these horses, they continued with the program. And they continued with it, giving him this massive windfall. Okay? He made $154,000 profit, spending $20,000, and they spent $140,000 just to transport the horses to him. Now, you would think there'd be an investigation, wouldn't you? No, the Office of Inspector General declined to investigate Mr. Davis. They declined to investigate his ties to Mr. Salazar, the head of the Department of the Interior, which is over the BLM. The investigation was then referred to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Colorado. He said, no, I'm not interested. These are powerful people. Then it was turned over to the state of Colorado County District Attorney's Office. They also declined any civil or criminal prosecution because, you know, in this country, if you're rich and powerful, you can get away with anything. It doesn't matter. Nobody's going to take a look at what you're doing. Nothing will stop them. And again, let's take a look at this report that just came out. FEMA will not help the Navajo Nation with the Gold King mine spill cleanup. FEMA says they have rejected a plea from the Navajo Nation for assistance in dealing with the fallout from the August 5th gold mine spill that sent more than 3 million gallons of toxic wastewater downstream into critical Navajo waterways. Now, of course, they have said that the EPA is to blame. They've accepted fault for that, just like in the kind of the indirect way that Tony Blair said, yeah, we were at fault for the Iraq War. So what? So what? Doesn't matter. So they create this explosion. They're warned this is going to happen. And this toxic waste is going to be very difficult to get rid of. But they're not going to help. EPA is not going to help. They created it. They were supposed to protect the environment, weren't they? They're not only not going to protect the environment, but they're not going to clean up their own pollution. You see, the pollution is worse wherever the government controls all the land. We've seen this for a very long time. Look at the pollution in China, for example, communist China especially, but even now that just a few people control everything in China. The real answer to pollution is not to create public lands, not to create massive government projects. It's to have private property. The Navajos don't want the water dirty. Individuals who have private property are going to take better care of it than the government is. The government uses this to increase the size of their department. The Interior Department probe of this spill concludes that the spill that fouled rivers in three states could have been avoided had the EPA team checked on water levels before digging into the mine. And the Colorado Attorney General says it answers the questions we've been asking the EPA. And the current owner of the Gold King mine feels that the EPA needs to better involve the private sector, including other area mine owners, instead of taking on the cleanup itself. See, they don't trust the EPA to clean up their own mess, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't trust them either. It's absolute insanity, but we see this. He says the takeaway is the huge government action is not the answer. You cannot keep the government accountable, whether it is fouling the water or destroying the wild horses that they were tasked to protect or the water that they were tasked to protect. They destroy the very things that they're tasked to protect because the only thing that matters to these government bureaucracies is making the government bureaucracies even larger than they were to start with. When we come back, we're going to take a look at Hillary Clinton and what happened at the Benghazi hearing. Was the most interesting thing the fact that she portrayed herself as a victim, or was it maybe what we learned about her health? We'll be right back.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at the Benghazi hearings with Hillary Clinton. As Maureen Dowd said in the New York Times, nobody plays the victim like Hillary. She can wield that label like a wrecking ball, and certainly she did. It looks like it was a master performance for Hillary Clinton as she lied, but there was one aspect of it that Matt Drudge picked up on that I think is very key. We mentioned it briefly on Friday, but I want to play this again for you, along with what happened in the subsequent to Matt Drudge pointing that out. Washington Post pushed back on it, and Drudge pushed back on what the Washington Post said. Before we go to that, first, I want to let you know that we now have 10% off of InfoWars Select Foods and free shipping. This savings could amount to $300 on a one-year food supply, because free shipping on this food is a huge savings, in addition to the 10% off. This is USA ingredients packaged exclusively in the USA. Everything from the tote to the packaging to the food, everything is made in the US. It's all packaged in Ziploc bags, so nothing goes to waste. You can reseal it after it is opened. Very high quality packaging, very high quality food. Here's a couple of reviews from our site. Great value, what you get for the price, and perfect storage container to take up the least amount of space. Great dishes for the whole family. That was from Sky Lookup at East Bay, California. Pat Riot in L.A., California says, I've already eaten three of the food items in the product. They're really good. Maybe ordering the three-month selection now. Again, you can get 10% off of InfoWars Select Foods at InfoWarsSelect.com and free shipping on any of the food that you buy there right now. So as we looked at the Benghazi performance by Hillary Clinton, one of the things that stood out was, and it's interesting that the title of Maureen Dowd's story talking about how she played the victim, it's called The Empire Strikes Back. And, you know, Hillary sounded at one point like she needed a respirator as badly as Darth Vader. She got on a coughing spree that lasted for a couple of minutes. Drudge said, I think that's maybe the most important revelation was perhaps her health. At which point, then subsequent to that, the Washington Post on Friday declared, and this is Drudge putting back his commentary, they pushed back on what Drudge had said. And so Drudge says, well, here's what Washington Post said, and here's what I say. So the Washington Post on Friday declared that Hillary Clinton does not suffer from hypothyroidism, even though her own doctor says she does. He says symptoms of low thyroid function include fatigue, hoarseness, impaired memory. Reporter Philip Bump, consulting with his own doctor, diagnosed Clinton as having normal thyroid function based on her Benghazi performance. But Hillary's internist revealed in August that the Democrat frontrunner's medical conditions include hypothyroidism. So there you go. You got the Washington Post covering up for Hillary. Let's play a little bit of that clip and let you see what we're talking about here.
A missile cruiser, a missile destroyer, a tanker. He served in Vietnam in the Persian Gulf. Excuse me.
You need some water, madam?
Be careful with that water. If you spill it, she might melt. So this goes on for quite a while. Now, this is something that's hard to do on the radio. We didn't play this very long, but really to get the impact of this, they're going to continue playing this. So really to get the impact of this, you have to understand that this goes on for a full 2 minutes, okay? Goes on for a full 2 minutes. Unfortunately, she did eventually recover, and she resumed lying. But I want to play for you, when Matt Drudge was here visiting the studio, he and Alex talked about this very issue, about Hillary Clinton's health. I want to play a little clip of that right now.
Alex, you are one of the very few who are operating under this theory to be an independent American. In a big way, if your calling is media, fine. If your calling is sports, whatever it is, but you've got to be the greatest you can be now, before this country is so completely altered,
right.
And we're left with Hillary's brain in the Oval Office in a jar, because that's what we're getting. She's old and she's sick. She's not a contender. They're making her a contender with these propped up Saturday Night Live things. It's like a head on a stick. And then on the Today Show with the Gun Three, a head on a stick. She is not a viable, vibrant leader for this country of 300, including the illegals, 380 million Americans. So the media is trying to put us to sleep. You're not letting them, Alex.
Let me ask you this question, Matt.
Yeah.
Is the establishment, which we know is diverse, but there's different conglomerates, is it panicking? Is it trying to push everything through right now because it knows people are waking up? Or is it just completely arrogant and thinks it's invincible?
It's trying to consolidate control, yes, and there is a sense of panic about it. You look at a Telemundo or a Univision, they're kind of panicked. You look at some of these interviews that are happening this election cycle where Trump comes along, says a few things, just a few things, and soars to the top of the list. That's profound. Imagine if we actually had a good selection of candidates who were saying a lot. And I know Cruz and Rand and all the rest. However, you've got to be dynamic in this atmosphere, and it's a media country. You've got to be dynamic in media. That's the only thing that's going to work. So I am left with thinking there's not a lot of time to be your greatest self, especially online, because if it continues to get consolidated to this degree, and then we're moving into the robots, which you're so profound on, and it's going to get really ugly, really fast. There's already automated news sites, Google News, hello anybody. They actually, the idiots reading that crap think there is actually a human there. There is no human there. You are being programmed to being automated, even up to your news. And Apple News, I don't know what that's about. That was also creepy. A same corporate glaze over everything. I don't see the world that way. I live in a world that's free, colorful, vibrant, takes chances, bold, stands up to power. And that's where I've made my success.
And we're always hearing the last 6-7 years that Matt Drudge is over. Matt Drudge doesn't exist. But then they have to admit Matt Drudge is bigger than ever. So this attempt to control reality or control who talks to who by these totalitarians that masquerade as liberals, I don't think is working. And now with Boehner being forced out, I think it shows the rumblings of the Tea Party beneath the surface. So, Matt, before you leave us, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, and by the way, the presidential candidates, that's exactly what you're saying, the rumblings. Look at anybody who has any form of success in the polls is because they rumble. Where it's going to end up, I don't know. I'm very pessimistic. I'm very pessimistic on this race because I'm just not so sure it's not going to end up with the dreaded brain in the jar in the Oval Office, once known as Hillary Clinton, who is hypothyroid. Anybody who is 70 years old who's hypothyroid, you do not elect president, ladies and gentlemen. You don't do it. Now, they'll say, well, it has to be who her VP is, whether it's the Castro from San Antonio or the other Castro from San Antonio or the other Castro from San Antonio, whoever it's going to be. I'm just shaking now after seeing NBC giving her endless hours of airtime over the past 72 hours that Hillary's back and she's back for real. Now, what that means to you or me, what it means to me, I've got a long history with these people. They're ugly. They play dirty. They sued me for $30 million last time around with the approval of the president, announced by the press secretary of the White House, a civil action. These people, and they didn't have the NSA then. They had Echelon. They had all these other things you were talking about even then. Hillary Clinton with the NSA, good luck if you dissent. Good luck if you dissent. Snowden, I'll switch places with you. You can come over here in rotten hell because that's what it's going to be. So I'm very concerned with the lay of the land. But the rumblings you're talking about, that we've seen a Trump, that we've seen a Carly, that do we see in a Sanders? Yeah, maybe. Also old. Can the Democrats find anybody under the age of 70? What is this oldness in a vibrant country that needs to go forward to a new century? So I don't know. I'm hoping for surprises. I'm hoping for some jolts. We'll have to see.
And again, that was Matt Drudge when he was here at the InfoWars studios talking to Alex Jones about this very issue, saying that he knew that Hillary Clinton had health issues. And then we saw that 2-minute spell there where she could not get her breath, where she couldn't say a single thing. And again, you can't play that on the radio. We can't have silence with an occasional coughing going on for full 2 minutes on the radio. But it is pretty amazing if you look at that story. When we come back, we're going to talk about the legitimate concerns about what was going on in Libya. I mean, there's legitimate concerns about the email. That's a whole nother aspect. The possession of classified information on her server and non-classified information that people have been prosecuted for, other people, but not the rich and powerful like Hillary Clinton. But we're going to focus on what was going on in Libya and the lies that were told by Hillary Clinton when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. On this segment, I would like to cover what we've been talking about Hillary Clinton. Let's talk about the reality of what was going on in Libya. And of course, again, Maureen Dowd talks about how they didn't lay a hand on her. She's excellent at playing the victim. But let's understand, as she points out, that it was really Hillary that was focusing on going after Libya. She says that she urged Obama to help topple Gaddafi without learning anything from the Iraq invasion that she had voted for. And since she was, as her aide Jake Sullivan put it, the public face of the U.S. effort in Libya, one of the Furies, along with Samantha Power and Susan Rice, who'd pushed for military intervention on humanitarian grounds, Hillary needed to stay on top of it. She says, when you're the Valkyrie who engineers the intervention, you can't say that it's then beneath you to pay attention to the ludicrously negligent security for your hand-picked choice of ambassador in a lawless country full of assassinations and jihadist training camps. Well, they're full of a lot of training camps now. And as a matter of fact, what was really behind this, as we've learned from multiple revelations, multiple sources, and we're going to play the report for you from John Bound, what was at the bottom of this was really arms trade by the CIA going on at that Benghazi ambassadorship there. Let's play that report from John Bound.
74 combined years in prison. That's how Iceland's Supreme Court and the Reykjavik District Court respond to those responsible for Iceland's financial collapse. This brings the total to 26 bankers now behind bars in Iceland, with most being CEOs of large financial institutions rather than low-level traders. Most of those jailed will serve terms of 2 to 5 years, according to a report by Iceland Magazine, which notes that 3 executives at Landsbankinn and 2 at Kaupthing, along with 1 prominent investor, have been prosecuted. Their crimes include market manipulation, embezzlement, and breach of fiduciary duties. Their market manipulation destroyed the country's economy, and to this day, Iceland is still having to repay the global loan sharks at the IMF, as well as governments of other countries.
Okay, let's pull that. That's actually, I wanted to run John Bound's report on the arms trade in Benghazi, and they got John Bound's report on the bankers in Iceland. Let me tell you what was going on in Benghazi. As I pointed out in this hearing here, she says, this is Maureen Dowd again, she says, in a rare moment of lucidity, Representative Mike Pompeo of Kansas said to Clinton, "You described Mr. Stevens as having the best knowledge of Libya of anyone, but when he asked for increased security, you didn't give it to him." And she says, "Well, you know, I didn't have his personal email or his cell phone number." So she doesn't have any of that stuff. She says there's no call logs of talks between Stevens and Clinton. She said she couldn't remember if she ever spoke to him again after she swore him in May. But as Maureen Dowd points out, Libya was the country where she was midwife to chaos. And again, she throws Stevens under the bus, saying that he was responsible for his own security. She said, "We were really counting on Chris to guide us and to give us the information on the ground." This is a story that we had up on October 22nd on Infowars.com. In other words, he failed me. I didn't make a mistake. He made a mistake. But again, Rand Paul says Hillary Clinton was bugging Obama to intervene in Libya. Exactly, saying the same thing that Maureen Dowd said. He says there's another story here. Why were we in Libya? Was it a good idea? Hillary Clinton was the biggest proponent, bugging Obama, saying we need to topple Gaddafi. Rand Paul goes on to say, well, if you look at Libya now, it's a failed state. There's no government. A third of those in Libya pledge allegiance to ISIS. I contend that not only did she not provide adequate security in Benghazi, but that she was a proponent for a war that actually made things less stable, worse off, and made it more likely that we will be attacked by someone in Libya. But it's even more obvious than that. This is a story from antiwar.com saying Hillary claims that Libya shows that the consequences of U.S. military withdrawal. In other words, all of this is happening because we left the area. That's not true. We're going to tell you why that's not true. We're going to tell you what was exactly happening there when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
On the march, the Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. I'm David Knight, your host. We've been talking about Hillary Clinton. We talked about the revelations that we saw as she gasped for air for over 2 minutes coughing. And went back to Matt Drudge talking about her hypothyroidism. This is a well-known fact by her doctor going back to August. But, of course, Washington Post pushes back on that and says, no. She had a great performance, so I don't think she's sick at all in spite of that. And we talked about what Matt Drudge pointed out, that, well, actually her doctor said it,
Your doctor, who hasn't examined her, pointed out that he didn't think that she had a condition. But let's talk a little bit about the Libya connection, because we've talked a lot about the email issues, the fact that many of these things are born classified. That's what the retired person who was in charge of classifying documents has said. He says, if you're talking to a foreign head of state and you have private conversations between them, that is born classified. But the very fact that she would set this up on an internal server, that she would put documents there that are State Department documents, that she would use it for official conversations, that in and of itself is a problem. We have seen NSA whistleblowers like Thomas Drake charged and prosecuted, although the charges were dropped because it was a phony prosecution. It was a persecution of him. But nevertheless, we've seen that he and others have been charged with deleting emails or having documents on their computers that are not even classified. So the fact that she says these were not classified, that doesn't matter. They charged Thomas Drake with having documents on his computer that were not classified. She violated the law. She deleted not just one email, as a CIA whistleblower was prosecuted for doing. She deleted thousands, tens of thousands of emails. So we've talked about that, but let's talk about what was going on in Libya. Let's talk about the bold-faced lies that she told. Here's a story from antiwar.com. Bizarre revisionism. Hillary Clinton claims Libya shows the consequences of U.S. military withdrawal. In other words, we have this mess there because we withdrew our forces. And Jason Ditz points out there never was a formal ground operation in Libya to begin with. He says while the U.S. illegally participated in the NATO war against Libya in 2011, they never actually had a ground presence in the country in the first place. Security was simply at the embassy level, as it is in most non-occupied countries. Okay, while Clinton presented the situation as a power vacuum that was fueling extremism, it wasn't the case. The centerpiece of the U.S. operations, he points out, in the country at the time was a CIA weapons smuggling operation inside of Benghazi. The reality is that when dozens of CIA agents are smuggling arms into the city, the American consulate in that city is inevitably housed that operation necessarily becomes a high-value target. That is precisely what happened. Now, again, there's a story from New American. Clinton exposed as a liar in Benghazi gate hearings, but the secrets remain. They say facing a question by Representative Mike Pompeo, Kansas, asked about whether Clinton knew of a gun-running scheme to Libyan rebels, Clinton said, well, I think the answer is no. Then asked if she knew whether the U.S. government or its proxies were sending weapons to Syrian rebels from Libya. She said, did you ever consider the idea of using private security experts to arm the opposition? And she said, not seriously, no. And they point out that the word seriously appears to be an effort to conceal the truth and to prevent her from being brought up on perjury charges. Because right after she said that, no, not seriously, Pompeo read an email from Clinton to another official at the time outlining a scheme to do exactly that. Quote, for your information, the idea of using private security experts to arm the opposition should be considered, she said. So there you go. That's what was at the bottom of what was going on there. And of course, Rand Paul is correct to point out that it has now become an arms bazaar, has descended into total chaos because Hillary Clinton pushed Obama to get rid of Gaddafi. Gaddafi was not a threat to anyone, had not been a threat to anyone for quite some time, but our government has had a long list, and we've had the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State has gone down this list of countries invading and continuing wars in at least seven different countries in the Middle East. They want to have continued instability, continued chaos, because it helps their military-industrial complex programs to have another Cold War that they're pushing with Russia. Let's go on to some political news now. We've got Ben Carson came out. This is a story on Infowars.com. He says, intensify the drug war. He was talking to Glenn Beck, and he said, if elected, he will intensify the war on drugs. He said he also opposes the legalization of marijuana. When asked about those, he says, absolutely. He said he would continue the war on drugs. I intend to fight. As I said before, has he been under anesthesia for the last 44 years to see what a failure the war on drugs has been? As we point out in our article, in 2010 alone, the federal government spent over $15 billion combating the use and distribution of illegal drugs, while state and local governments spent $25 billion. So look, in 2010, combined state and federal spending on the drug war was $40 billion. Multiply that out by 44 years. What do you get? $1.7 trillion, if that was typical, a typical year. Now, that's an insane amount of money. That's an insane amount of money, $1.7 trillion. And I don't know what the total figure is. That's just a rough calculation based on what we spent in 2010. But that doesn't include the cost in lives that have been lost from the war on drugs. It doesn't include the cost of people's lives that have been destroyed by being put in prison with mandatory minimums. It doesn't include the cost to the public of civil asset forfeiture, where without due process, your property is stolen. We have lost the concept of due process. We've lost the concept of private property because of the war on drugs. And of course, it has been a boon to the government. It's been a boon to the organized crime figures. It's given them a monopoly on a very lucrative black market, just as we saw during alcohol prohibition. And it brings up the point yet again that Ben Carson doesn't understand or care the first thing about individual liberty or the Constitution. We don't have legal authority in the Constitution. The federal government doesn't have legal authority for a drug war. Does Ben Carson and do the conservatives who support him, do they realize that the war on drugs is a UN agenda? It was something that was created. Our four schedules, where they have Schedule 1, 2, 3, 4 drugs. Marijuana is a Schedule 1 drug, saying that it has absolutely no medical use. That's an outright lie, but that's the way they operate with the war on drugs. That whole process was set up by the United Nations in 1961, 10 years before Richard Nixon declared the war on drugs in 1971. This whole thing is a UN agenda. And conservatives are buying into a UN agenda that has destroyed private property, that has bred corruption, that has increased organized crime, that has filled our prisons at a rate that no country in history has ever had people in prison. We've got more people in prison than China. And they've got a population that I think is, if I remember the statistics, 7 times larger than ours. We've got more people in prison than any other country, China, Russia, North Korea. We've got a larger number of people, a larger percentage by far than any other country. And it's because of the war on drugs. And Ben Carson wants to stomp on the rights of states to stop this madness. That's a form of madness itself. And this is how he justifies it. He says, you know, we're gradually just removing all the barriers to hedonistic activity. Removing the barriers to hedonistic activity. So he wants to continue this insane, illegal war on drugs that hasn't accomplished anything because he doesn't like hedonistic activity. I look at this and I look at my friends who support him, my Christian friends who support him, and I say the Christian church in America worships government, not God. It sees more power in the fist of the police, sees more power in the truncheon than it does in the cross. And it disgusts me to see people so in love with government, so completely blind to the power of Christ to change lives, that they want to use the fist of government. And then he goes on to say, well, do the same people that argue for getting rid of the war on drugs, do they argue for freedom of choice when someone says they want to buy a gun? Of course they don't. And that's the problem. The left wants to take away the Second Amendment, and the right wants to take away the Ninth and the Tenth and the Fourth and everything else. We have to come together, and the war on drugs needs to stop, and so does the war on the right to keep and bear arms. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. Radio, radio,
radio, radio. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. We're going to get back to politics. We were just talking about what Ben Carson was saying about the drug war. He wants to ramp up the drug war. And we talked about the insanity of that. We're going to go back to some of what the other candidates are saying. Of course, Jeb Bush is saying some pretty incredibly stupid things. Things are starting to collapse around him, and he's starting to get a bit crazy with the things that he says. We're going to cover that. We're also going to take your calls if you want to call in and comment on some of the topics we've been talking about today or on something else, the number will be 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-ALEX if you want to call in and comment on what we've been talking about today. Before I get back to the news, I just want to let you know that we have Super Male Vitality back in stock. It's back for a limited run. Now is the time to get yours before we sell out again. Once we sell out, it could be months before we're able to secure another shipment. This ultra-strength formula contains organic herbs and acids and that are the real deal. Let me give you a couple of comments on our site here. This is because we give people the capability to make comments about the different products so you can help make up your mind about what you like with this, what will work for you. Here's one from Guide in Boise, Idaho. He says, this is far superior to other products I've tried in the past. He says, stamina and clarity, especially in the morning with no running out of gas in the afternoon. It works for me, and I notice a better recovery after my workouts. Another review from Info Warrior in Hawesville, Kentucky says, there's nothing bad about Supermail. The best product I've found that works, I use it daily. It's great to take and work out with. Alex Jones has great products. I've been telling all my friends about this product. Alex Jones, you're the best. Again, you can read those reviews and at InfoWarsLife.com and order Super Male Vitality before we sell out. Again, it's back in stock. It won't last very long. Going back to the comments that Ben Carson said, one of the last things that he had in this article we got up on InfoWars.com from Kurt Nemo, he says, well, do the same people who argue for freedom of choice with drugs, when someone says, I want to buy a gun, I want to buy an Uzi, Carson said, let's be consistent with this thing. It's like, yeah, let's be consistent. Let's follow the Constitution. Let's understand that you don't have the authority to ban this stuff. And if you take this, if you allow people to prohibit things that you don't have the authority to prohibit, then they're going to come after things that are even expressly protected, like the right to keep and bear arms. We need to be consistent. We need to be constitutional. And I would like to see Ben Carson actually read the Constitution and understand it. Again, as I've said before, the way I look at the way he's running for president, it's like somebody, he's a physician, he's a brain surgeon. It would be as if he was trying to do brain surgery, never having read Gray's Anatomy. The man has absolutely no appreciation of or understanding of individual liberty. He wants to take away your informed consent when it comes to vaccinations. He has opposed the right to keep and bear arms in the past. And now he thinks that he can just arbitrarily, along with the rest of the politicians in Washington, that they can arbitrarily tell you what you can and cannot put in your body. And that includes the FDA as well. But of course, as a doctor, he thinks that they ought to be able to dictate to you what medicines you are allowed to take and what you must take in the future. That's going to be the other side of that. That's the vaccine side. Now, Mike Huckabee talked about guns. He said that gun stores should disobey any Obama executive orders because we see that Obama is now increasingly talking about doing gun control by executive order. Mike Huckabee, who's also running for president, said the more we surrender the Constitution, the more he will keep that going. Precisely. But what he needs to understand and what he needs to talk to people about, but you won't hear any presidential candidates talk about state nullification, because that's what the states have done with the legalization of drugs, with medical marijuana, as well as with recreational use of marijuana. That is state nullification. That is the people saying, you know what, we're tired of this failed war on drugs. It hasn't done anything but give us more dangerous forms of the drugs. It hasn't reduced the amount of usage. Instead, what we've gotten is a massive police state, a massive prison state, massive organized crime, given a monopoly in the black market, and we're tired of it. So we're going to nullify that federal war on drugs, which is really a UN agenda, as I mentioned in the last segment. So Huckabee needs to talk about state nullification, not only, you know, for all of these issues. We have to understand that this is about individual freedom. It isn't about whether you like guns or whether you like drugs. If we can get past that, if we can get past the idea that the left wants to have drugs legalized because they like them, the right wants to have guns legalized because they like them, we need to understand that we don't want government dictating to us these things. And we need to come together and we need to allow people to have the freedom to do things that we wouldn't necessarily want to do if we're going to have the freedom to do what we want to do. You understand that? It's all the way across the spectrum. It's all or nothing. You either respect individual rights and the Constitution that was written to respect those individual rights, or you get nothing. You won't have your guns if you take away people's drugs because you're supporting an illegal operation by an illegal government without authority. And he needs to talk about not only state nullification, but Mike Huckabee needs to talk about jury nullification. Because if people in the gun stores are going to say, well, I don't like Obama's laws about guns, then they're going to be thrown in jail, just like the people who disobey the illegal war on drugs. And we need to stop that. And the way to stop that is with jury nullification, if we can't get people at the state level to do it. Otherwise, the gun store owners are going to kind of be left out there on their own, as we have seen with people who legitimately were growing medical marijuana following state laws and then arrested by the federal government. We've seen that happen. It will happen with the gun store owners, even if those orders are illegal, because having an illegal order doesn't mean anything in America. They will use force of arms, even if they don't have the legal authority. Now, things are getting really tough for Jeb. We have a story up on Infowars.com today. Jeb says, I could be doing really cool things instead of being president, instead of running for president. They say the outburst is likely the culmination of frustration that his sagging campaign is going nowhere. And I would say, please, please do. Please, you know, go do your really cool thing and don't inflict us with another Bush presidency. The American Mirror says Jeb Bush is now acting as though the American people should be grateful that he is running for president. Here's the clip where he says that.
If this election is about how we're going to fight to get nothing done, then I don't want anything. I don't want any part of it. I don't want to be elected president to sit around and see gridlock just become so dominant that people literally are in decline in their lives. That is not my motivation. I got
pause
a
it
lot
right
of
there.
Really
pause
cool
it right there.
Things
pause
that I
it.
Could do. Other.
Okay. Okay. You hear that? I don't want to see gridlock happening where people are literally having a decline in their lives. Do you understand what a statist mindset that is? That if the government doesn't keep writing more laws, our lives are going to literally decline? Nothing could be further from the truth. We got to get over this mentality that's been around my entire life. There ought to be a law about that. There ought to be a law about this. There ought to be a law about that other thing. That's what has killed this country. And we don't need more of that. We don't depend on the government to pass more laws in order to keep things flowing. He says we're going to be literally in decline. I want gridlock. He says he thinks that Trump is going to bring gridlock. Well, that's the best argument I've heard yet for electing Donald Trump. We need to stop the government from creating more laws. We have so many laws now, nobody knows what they are. We'll be right back. We'll continue on with what Jeb Bush has to say. You won't believe what else he had to say. We'll be right back.
Now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Sunday, October 25th, 2015. We've been talking about Jeb Bush. You know, as Gerald Celente says, when people lose everything, they lose it. Well, we see Jeb Bush losing it. He's a good example of this. We just heard part of a clip. I want to finish this clip, and then we're going to go to our callers. We heard this clip where he's saying, well, we don't want to have gridlock, because in gridlock, we're going to see people literally declining in their lives. In other words, if I'm not there, if Jeb Bush is not there to save you, you are literally going to have a decline in your life because you're not going to have new laws passed. I need to be there to run your lives for you. Let's play the rest of this clip. Absolutely amazing.
Around and see gridlock just become so dominant that people literally are in decline in their lives. That is not my motivation. I got a lot of really cool things that I could do other than sit around being miserable, listening to people demonize me and me feeling compelled to demonize them. That is a joke. Elect Trump if you want that.
He's got better things to do. And of course, he says this in this really hokey photo. If you look at this, he's sitting in a chair in front of a picture of the Lincoln Memorial, where Lincoln is sitting in a chair, and he is sitting there exactly like Lincoln. No subliminal messages there for you, okay? Sorry, having the name Bush, sitting in front of a picture of Lincoln and posing like Lincoln in front of the picture of Lincoln ain't gonna do it, Jeb. This is what's happening to the campaign. He's slashing payroll costs by 40%. He's downsizing his Miami headquarters more than 50%. He's reducing travel costs by 20%. He's cutting 45% of spending in areas not related to media and voter contact. He's letting his senior officials continue on a volunteer basis, and he's letting his non-senior officials go. Okay? Now, Trump jumped on this. Trump said, here's a guy who wants to run our country. He can't even run his own campaign. You know what? He's cutting back big. Bush has no money. He's cutting. He's meeting today with mommy and daddy, and they're working on their campaign. Yes, exactly what's happening. It was reported, one of the headlines, there is a royal summit of the Bushes going on. They are having everyone come in. W is coming in along with mommy and daddy, and they're entertaining potential donors and trying to push this. Here we go. Emergency royal family meeting. Jeb to meet with former presidents Bush 41 and 43 in Houston as the campaign is struggling. Will that pull him out? I don't think so. But of course, the other part of the problem is, and maybe this is not a problem, maybe this is a feature, maybe this is intentional. Donald Trump's speeches are at a fourth grade level, finds a study. This is a readability test, the Flesch-Kincaid test. It ranks speeches by grade level. It finds out that those who are doing the best are those who are speaking at the lowest grade level. Those who are doing the worst are speaking at the higher grade levels in general. The two candidates speaking at the highest grade levels, Mike Huckabee and Jim Gilmore, are struggling in the polls, but Trump is doing well when he talks to people at a fourth grade level. Now, looking at the speeches from George Washington, for example, they find that he was speaking at graduate degree levels at nearly grade 18, to be exact. Okay, so that would be postgraduate. They say Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was at 11th grade level. I guess today you would lose the citizens right from the very beginning. When you say 47 years ago, they'd say, what? What? What's that about? To give you an example, though, of the kind of fourth grade rhetoric that we've got going on, we've got Trump also coming after Rubio. He goes right to their home turf in Florida. He talks about Rubio. He says, Rubio was very disloyal to Bush. Everybody admits Bush was his mentor. They're fighting like crazy. I'm laughing watching them fight. And he needs a lot of water on top of everything else. Talking about the fact that he had to have a drink of water in the middle of his response to the State of the Union. That is really not why we shouldn't get Rubio. There's plenty of reasons not to have Rubio. Rubio is an open borders guy. He is for the police state. He's for unlimited wars. He is for everything that is anti-freedom, essentially. But, of course, this election, like most of the rest of the elections that we had, are going to be on personality. That's what it seems to be turning on. But it's not just Trump that's resorting to low levels of dialogue, low-grade levels of dialogue. Of course, as I said, Bush is losing it. Jeb is losing it. When people asked him about what was going on with his campaign, his response was, blah, 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 Bush said. That's my answer, blah, blah, blah. He truly is losing it. He was asked a very serious question because, again, the press wants to know what's going on with the surveillance state. I mean, we just passed CISA, right? They want to know what's going on with the cloak and dagger wars that they're creating, the CIA creating terrorist organizations, creating wars. No, no, they're not asking about that. What they asked Jeb Bush about was, who are your favorite Marvel superheroes? And here's what Jeb Bush had to say.
Who is your favorite superhero? Marvel, they have in parentheses, and why? Do you think the superhero...
This is the second time I've been asked this question. What's up with this?
People want to know.
Someone told me there's a new Marvel show. It's about Ant-Man or something like that.
You like that one?
No, I haven't met Ant-Man yet.
You're more of a DC Comics guy?
I like watching the movies, and I wish I owned Marvel. as someone that believes in capitalism, yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of old school. I kind of like I like the old school guys, like Batman. A little dark these
good
days.
Good choice.
I saw that there's a Supergirl is on TV. I saw it when I was working out this morning. There's an ad promoting Supergirl. She looked pretty hot.
There you go. That's the important questions that we need to have asked in this presidential campaign. They may be talking to the population at a fourth grade level because that's the kind of questions that the population wants answered. And of course, if anybody's paying any attention, Supergirl and Batman are DC comics. They're not even Marvel comics. But what difference does it make? I mean, who cares? Let's go to Ronnie in Texas. Ronnie, you had a comment about Ben Carson and the war on drugs. Go ahead.
Well, yes, sir. Dr. Ben Carson's candidacy, the media darling Ben Carson's, is supposedly absolutely blooming, not in spite of, but because of Dr. Ben Carson's surrender to the organized crime thugopoly on our overwhelmingly beneficial natural medicine called marijuana. By the way, I can give a personal testimonial about how tetrahydrocannabinol has helped my ongoing recovery from my own coma-inducing traumatic brain injury, help save our troops with THC, help save lives, help save our nation by taking money from organized crime thugs, and while helping to save our nation's struggling family farms, no matter what they grow. And by the way, Dr. Rand Paul has long been on the right side of this liberty issue here. And surprise, our lame scheme prostitutes are lockstep in giving Dr. Rand Paul the Dr. Ron Paul treatment by ignoring him and or dismissing him or distorting what he has to say. And,
well, I agree. I think that Ben Carson is going to be a Jimmy Carter type of president if he gets elected. I think he'll be easily controlled by somebody like Zbigniew Brzezinski, like controlled Carter, or by somebody like Henry Kissinger. He really doesn't seem to know what's going on. I think he is somebody that they understand they can control. He's taken essentially down the line, the traditional GOP party line positions. And I think it's very interesting, Ronnie, that here we have a guy who's a brain surgeon. He says he's also a specialist on epilepsy. One of the exemptions that we just had put in Texas, the only exemption for marijuana, was for people who were struggling from uncontrollable seizures, continuous seizures. And in most cases, these children in Texas that are suffering from this, they got that, interestingly enough, as an adverse reaction to a vaccine. But we have Dr. Carson, who says, no, we're going to tell you when you should take vaccines. We're going to tell you how many you should have. We're going to tell you which ones you're going to take, and you have no informed consent in the matter. He supports that in principle. And then he seems to be completely clueless as to the adverse reactions to some of these vaccines that people have had and the cure for it, the only cure for it, which is medical marijuana. Thanks, Ronnie. When we come back, we're going to take some more of your calls. We're also going to take a look at another political race that is very important, and that is the one for Speaker. It may already be over. We may have already been betrayed by the conservatives in Congress yet again. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to try to get through as many calls as we can in this last segment. Before I get back to the calls, just want to let you know that Liver Shield is now back in stock at InfoWarsLife.com. We keep selling out of Liver Shield, and for a very good reason. It's very effective. You may be following Leanne McAdoo's personal liver flush story right now using Liver Shield. She's also got videos up about the recipes that she's using. Liver Shield uses a powerful blend of organic and wildcrafted herbs specifically formulated to support natural function and detoxification of the liver and the gallbladder. Again, try Liver Shield. Learn about how to perform a liver flush at InfoWarsLife.com. Again, you can follow Leanne's story as she's going through the process and vlogging about it. This is a limited run, but it is now available at InfoWarsLife.com. Let's go back to our callers. Stephen in Florida, you had a comment about Dr. Carson and his wanting to revive the war on drugs or keep it going. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, David. Before I get to that, just let me say this real quick. You're talking about the Bushes. You know, instead of the Royal Commission or, you know, committee, whatever it is you're saying they're going to get together, you ought to really put it this way. The nasty high command is getting together when you look at their history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, going back to Prescott, yeah.
Yeah, because they're just total scumbags supporting, you know, Planned Parenthood and everything else they've been involved in. But as far as Carson, here's what I wanted to say about him. Ben Carson typifies what's wrong with Christianity in America, because here, you know, he's talking about the war on drugs, and I'm against all drugs as a Christian, but I don't do them because Jesus saved me. That's why I gave them all up. But here's the thing. If he was really serious about going after the evils of drugs, why doesn't he get on board with outlawing the main cartel that pushes drugs? And that's the combination of the FDA, the CDC, the DEA, and the pharmaceutical industry. They're the biggest drug operation in the world. But no, instead he supports them by saying there's no connection between autism and vaccines when it's clear there is, and all the other things he's pushing. So my conclusion about Mr. Carson is typical of Christianity in America. He's living in a fantasy world. Either he's been bought off by Big Pharma and likes all the perks he gets them and being a pill-pushing priest for their eugenics religion, or he's living in a religious bubble and is just totally oblivious to reality. And that's the way Christianity in America, unfortunately, to a great extent, has become. And it's no wonder America's in the shape it's in.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. It's a spiritual issue. It's a psychological issue, if you will. It is not a law enforcement issue. And we have been using this for the last 44 years and getting awful results. We've just made everything worse with it. As you're pointing out, there's a new study that came back. Two-thirds of people who are using antidepressants, 69%, don't have depression. They don't meet the qualifications for depressive disorder. They are typically Caucasian. They have recent or current physical problems, or maybe they've got an insurance policy that will pay for these kinds of antidepressant drugs. That's why it's being done. It's being done for profit, and we see that the most dangerous drugs out there are the legal SSRI drugs. That's the common link behind all these mass shootings and suicides that we see going on and on, but that's coming from Big Pharma, so you're not going to hear Dr. Carson or any other Republican candidates or Democrat candidates, for that matter, talking about that. Thank you, Steve. Let's go to Joe in Arkansas. You want to make a comment on conservatives and the UN agenda? Go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about how conservatives support the UN agenda when they support the war on drugs, and I wanted to point out another place where conservatives are supporting the UN agenda, and that's when they support free trade.
Yes.
And if you read UN Agenda 21, you'll see that the first thing that it calls for before it gets into the environmental stuff is it calls for getting rid of all protectionism so that the wealth of the more developed countries can be transferred to the third world. And also in the 1963 congressional record where it listed the current goals of the Communist Party of the United States. One of them was free trade with all countries, regardless of communist affiliation, such as maybe China. Mm-hmm. And Karl Marx said that he, in 1848, Karl Marx said that he was in favor of free trade because it would increase the gap between the rich and poor, it would exaggerate and intensify class warfare, and it would make it easier to recruit working people to support socialism. And the Republicans in the late 19th and early 20th century, they were strong supporters of protectionism. They were strong supporters of tariffs on imports. And it was because of that that the United States during that time became the greatest manufacturing country and the strongest economy in the world. And of course, now we see when we've gotten rid of that, when we've gone to the communist way of free trade, you know, we're declining as a manufacturing power and an economic power in the world.
I would agree with what you say about free trade, and I would say that when you look at these free trade agreements, though, it's even worse than that, because these are globalist agreements. These are, as Senator Sessions looked at it, he said, you are creating a transnational governance. Once you create these so-called treaties, and they're going to do them by ignoring the constitutional process for passing treaties, once you pass these still secret treaties, you are going to allow this transnational committee to alter this without any further input from any state legislatures. They can add different countries to this agreement. They can change everything about the agreement. And of course, they are going to be above the nations who sign onto this agreement. So in many ways, this is about our internet freedom. It's about sovereignty. And it is not simply about free trade. We can have that discussion about free trade, but it is about globalism. And when we look at this, we need to understand how the conservatives have betrayed us on the speakership position. Some conservatives got together and they pushed out Boehner. But now when it comes to getting his replacement, it looks like Paul Ryan is going to be a shoo-in. Why? Because conservative opposition to him has folded. And it is folded because we've got people like the Heritage Foundation, very conservative, mainstream conservative organizations, people like Jim DeMint, now throwing their backing behind Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan supports this secret treaty that we still don't know what's in it. He also has supported his entire career, even going back to being a staffer with Jack Kemp. He supported open borders, open immigration. It's a total betrayal of what we're looking at. And of course, with open borders and with transnational governance, both these treaties and the open borders are about creating a globalist governance. If you go back and you look at what's going on with these trade agreements, and you look at what Paul Ryan did, he was called on this by a fellow congressman. He said, you read through this language down in the secret room, talking to Mr. Ryan. And he said, and I welcome the day when people can read it. Ryan responded, it could be read by the general public once it's agreed to. Well, he's lying about that. It's been about 3 weeks now that they say they've agreed to, they've reached an agreement on this, and we still haven't been able to see what's in it. He says, this caused some to recall that former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's reference to the contents of Obamacare, where she said, we have to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it. That's the kind of person that the conservatives are now pushing. Somebody who has supported open borders and amnesty for his entire political career, who supports a secret trade agreement, who has worked with Obama on both of these globalist agendas. Thank you, Joe. Let's go to Joe in Southern Indiana. You want to talk about Benghazi? Go ahead.
I would like to know why the Congressional Committee did not make a major issue out of who ordered a stand down that prevented a military action to rescue and respond to the heroic, epic heroic efforts of three soldiers who disobeyed orders to stand down and went to the rescue knowing they were going to die because there were hundreds of attackers.
Yes.
And who ordered that stand down, and whoever did should be tried for treason because they went against everything that every true military man and soldier believes in, which is that you go to the help of those under attack.
Exactly. And that goes back, Joe, to the issues about whether or not Benghazi was the hub of an arms trade that was going on with the CIA, whether they wanted to cover that up. And it also, I would say, suggest that the person who came up with all of these phony stories in the wake of what happened, talking about how it was a reaction to some obscure film that nobody had seen and nobody would possibly take seriously, leading to the arrest of that filmmaker, that would be Hillary Clinton. So we see a massive campaign of lies that were changing on a daily basis in the wake of that. We see that we had secure documents that were being kept on her email. We see just a trail of lies. I agree with you. I think there's so many different aspects of Benghazi. That's why this has gone on for so long. But that's her strategy. The Clintons love to let these investigations just drag on and on until people's eyes glaze over and they fall asleep. And that's been a very effective strategy. Let's go real quickly if we've got time to, well, we don't have time. I wanted to get to Maggie in Texas to get her comments about the BLM and the horses, but we just don't have time. So sorry. Join us tomorrow. We'll be back at 11 Central, 12 Eastern for the Alex Jones Radio Show. That's it for today's broadcast.